mean forgetting about your own needs and desires and becoming a pushover. An Indian meditation teacher named Munindra advised all of his students to keep things simple and easy. One day, a student saw his teacher fiercely negotiating over a bag of peanuts in the village marketplace. When the student confronted him over his behavior, what he thought was a contradiction to the simple and easy mantra, Munindra replied, "I said be simple, not a simpleton." Controlling your ego does not mean that you have to lose your edge or stop being a productive member of society. In fact, according to Professor Jon Kabat-Zinn, practicing mindfulness actually makes you more creative and more productive as it clears your mind of unhelpful assumptions and routines, thus making space for new ideas and new, better routines. During a 10-day meditation retreat, the author was flooded with ideas with which he filled entire notebooks. He was more productive in this time of peace and mindfulness than he normally was, when his mind was cluttered and chaotic, full of information. Interestingly, one of the most important discoveries that the author made on his journey to tame his ego was that high levels of stress or the need for competition were not necessary to fuel his drive. Quite the contrary, he found that it was a much more satisfying exercise to control these urges than to indulge in them. At this point, we have talked quite a lot about meditation, but what is it exactly? In essence, when you meditate, you sit comfortably and focus on your own breath. During this time, your mind will inevitably wander off to other things. That's okay. When this happens, simply refocus your mind on your breathing and do not judge it. The nice thing about meditation is that you do not need anything to get started. Anyone can meditate anywhere. So, meditation is easy. But what's in it for you? Why should you bother? For starters, meditation increases mindfulness by teaching us to view the contents of our mind with non-judgmental distance. According to Buddhist teachings, we have three habitual responses to everything we experience. 1. We want it. Think about that gut-level desire to eat that delicious cookie or chocolate. 2. We reject it. Imagine swatting an annoying mosquito. 3. We zone out. Have you ever listened to a flight attendant's safety instructions all the way through? Probably not. Mindfulness gives us a fourth option. We observe without judgment. Your first experience with mindfulness during meditation often happens when you experience some sort of uncomfortable situation, like an itchy nose or sore legs. In this case, you simply observe the pain without reacting or moving. Eventually, you'll be able to apply mindfulness to more complex discomforts, your thoughts and emotions. In addition, meditation increases your compassion. In the month after the author added conscious compassion to his meditation practice, he began seeing changes in his life. He found that he was not only kinder to others, but also to himself. For example, he was better able to avoid gossip at work, became more empathetic towards others, and felt less annoyed by their idiosyncrasies or shortcomings. Meditation is not only good for the mind, it can also have a profound positive effect on the body. Humans still have not shed the fight-or-flight instinct triggered by times of danger. While modern life has changed our daily threats from prowling tigers to highway traffic, the way that stress affects our body has not changed. constant stimulation keeps us in a state of overload, which causes high levels of toxic stress chemicals to accumulate in our blood. However, studies have shown that meditation can actually reverse the effects of these stress chemicals by lowering blood pressure and thus reducing the risk of heart disease. Research also suggests that the mindfulness practice during meditation can spill into everyday life, leading to increased patience, empathy, and compassion. Imagine that you are stuck in a traffic jam on your way to work. Normally, you might react angrily and impatiently, punching your steering wheel and thinking, "Why is this happening to me?" However, once you have practiced mindfulness, you will simply observe these thoughts and let them pass without becoming consumed by them. You will not react, but respond with sober calmness. Other studies have shown even more obvious health benefits. Meditation can also be beneficial in battling major depression, drug addiction, binge eating, and smoking. It can help cancer patients better handle the stress, and senior citizens avoid loneliness. Meditation can also stem the effects of ADHD, asthma, psoriasis, and even irritable bowel syndrome. Finally, meditation allows you to sculpt the one tool you have for perceiving and experiencing the world, your brain. Indeed, studies have shown that training your brain through meditation can improve your resilience, impulse control, and your overall level of well-being. Yet, meditation cannot rid your mind of negative thoughts altogether. Meditation is not a cure-all. So, what should you do to help stem the influence of those negative emotions? Psychotherapist and Buddhist teacher Tara Brach suggests that you simply acknowledge your negative feelings, that is, admit that you are experiencing them, rather than try to deny them. The Buddhists teach that we should let go, but what they really mean is let it be. Instead of denying ugly characteristics or negative feelings, just let them be without judging yourself for having them. Another Buddhist saying is that the only way out is through. Imagine those negative feelings as an immense wave coming right toward you. The best way not to drown is to dive into the wave, thus causing it to lose its power over you. The author learned this the hard way after he tried to shut out all of his negative memories of reporting in a war zone through using drugs, instead of acknowledging the sorrow and brutality he had witnessed. Eventually, his refusal to manage his negative emotions in a healthy way led to him having a panic attack on air. There are more proactive ways of dealing with negative emotions. According to Brach's teachings, there are four stages to accepting these feelings. First, you must recognize the emotion, then allow it to exist. Investigate its effects, and finally, separate yourself from it through the practice of non-identification. The author practiced this when he was concerned about a promotion. First, he recognized that he was worried. Then, he convinced himself that it was okay to be worried. Then, he investigated how his body was handling this worry. He felt a buzzing in his chest. And finally, he practiced non-identification, telling himself that he is bigger than his momentary concerns and that this moment of worry would pass. By recognizing that his fears over a promotion would not turn him into a habitually worried person, the author was able to separate himself from his emotions and ultimately conquer his ego. Final summary. Our modern lives push us into a constant state of stress and panic, and this has major consequences on our mental and physical health. We can combat this stress through the practice of meditation, which can ultimately lead to a more compassionate, fulfilling, and productive life. This concludes 10% Happier by Dan Harris. A Force for Good by Daniel Goleman. A Force for Good reveals how you can swap your negative thoughts for positive actions by taking a closer look at the Dalai Lama's wisdom and vision. This book will explain how individuals acting positively can together form a global force of good, driving change in our world through mutual compassion. When you turn on the evening news, it is easy to get depressed. All over the world, there are wars, conflicts, and overwhelming human misery. Is this really the best we can do? According to the Dalai Lama, many of the world's problems stem from a lack of compassion and moral responsibility. We care more about money than each other. So, how do we get out of this mess? As this book will show you, when we learn to replace our own negative emotions with compassion and love, we become more dedicated to the well-being of everyone around us. If we take care to listen to both science and religion, and what they can teach us about how we live our lives, we can truly become a force for good. Every day at 5:30 a.m., the Dalai Lama wakes up bright and early to listen to the BBC News while he eats his breakfast. While this might not be the morning routine you imagined for the Dalai Lama, he maintains that through his daily ritual, he's come upon a great revelation. Listening to the news reveals how full of violence, cruelty, and tragedy our world really is. But why? The Dalai Lama believes it actually comes down to one single deficiency: a lack of compassionate moral responsibility. Today, we act out of self-interest and disregard our moral obligation to others. Seems quite grim, doesn't it? But look at it this way. If humans have the power to wreak so much damage and destruction, then we might also have the power to exert an equivalent positive impact. This is what the Dalai Lama calls a force for good. A force for good begins with individuals and starts from within them. By creating an inner shift that diminishes our negative emotions and strengthens our capacity to act morally, we become better able to overcome impulsive reactions such as rage, frustration, and hopelessness. This shift will also see us become more compassionate to those around us and to our shared planet. Unlike the Dalai Lama, not all of us are able to commit 5 hours a day to inner practices such as meditation, but we can still take some small steps. The Dalai Lama has fashioned a plan that each individual can follow. It begins with looking inward and managing our own minds and hearts. This will help us look at our world and see the places where we can do good. Even the Dalai Lama had a short temper once upon a time. Of course, he learned to master his emotions, and he did so with a few techniques that are simpler than you may expect. One important technique entails taking a step back when tempted to act upon your feelings and considering the consequences of your actions. In March 2008, the Chinese army shot at demonstrators and arrested many Tibetan protesters, particularly monks, during a series of protests. How did the Dalai Lama react to this? Of course, hearing such news would have filled him with rage. Nevertheless, the Dalai Lama chose to stay calm. He visualized the Chinese officials and replaced their negative feelings with his love, compassion, and forgiveness, having reasoned that the consequence of acting out of anger would only be further damage. He chose instead to control his feelings. But remember, controlling your feelings is not the same as suppressing them altogether. Bottling up negative emotions can lead to outbursts that are impossible to control. When dealing with powerful emotions, it is best to stay mindful. We are better off recognizing negative emotions when we experience them and asking whether the emotions we feel are in proportion to the situation or whether they are simply familiar. By understanding our negative emotions, we are better equipped to channel them into positive actions. Compassion and awareness go hand in hand. Now that we've taken a closer look at emotional awareness, it is time to delve into compassion, starting with where the notion comes from in the first place. In the Dalai Lama's view of the concept, compassion is deep in our nature and does not come from religion. Think about it. Even dogs and cats can be compassionate and altruistic to some extent. So why should compassion be bound up in religious institutions and their traditions? Compassion is superior to and separate from religion. In fact, it is rooted in our biological makeup. Parents instinctively care for their young who would otherwise die, and that is a sign of a biological predisposition for caring and compassion. Moreover, our bodies have built-in needs for positive emotions such as love, joy, and playfulness. These experiences help to boost our immune system and lower the risk of heart disease. But, above all, we are psychologically predisposed to seek comfort in affection, compassion, and a sense of belonging within a group. Compassion puts our attention on something bigger than our petty concerns. This larger goal energizes us in turn. Having explored where compassion comes from and why we need it, let us investigate how it manifests itself in our world. The Dalai Lama's form of compassion is not the wishy-washy kind that is confined to holidays or Sunday school. Rather, he calls for moral responsibility in all spheres of public life, which includes having a profound distaste for injustice, as well as taking initiative to expose and reform corrupt systems. Three principles exemplify such compassion in action: fairness, transparency, and accountability. By treating everyone equally, remaining open and honest, and taking responsibility for our mistakes, we can create a powerful form of compassion to drive our actions. Compassion in action doesn't just mean relieving suffering, but also getting engaged in rectifying wrongs by actively opposing injustice or protecting people's rights. Moreover, the Dalai Lama encourages us to learn how we can reduce our destructive emotions. Of course, feelings such as anger and frustration can also be constructive, functioning as drivers of positive action. For example, the Dalai Lama once met a social worker whose group had been given too many cases, making it impossible for them to help any of the individuals. The social worker became morally outraged, and it was with this anger that he motivated his team to protest and successfully get their workload reduced. However, it doesn't take much for anger to go from constructive to destructive. One way to ensure we use frustration to drive positive action is by maintaining basic compassion towards the person that we take the issue with. It is clear that compassion is a reoccurring theme here. Does it surprise you that the Dalai Lama routinely meets Nobel Prize-winning scientists discussing intricate theories with the likes of Bob Livingston, David Bohm, Wolf Singer, and Paul Ekman? Well, it shouldn't. The Dalai Lama acknowledges the strength of both science and religion, and we should too. Despite what we may think, spirituality and science are not mutually exclusive. They are merely alternative strategies in the quest for reality. So why not bring them together? Science can connect with individuals on a larger scale than any individual religious faith, as it is not marketed by the divisions and conflicts of differing religious denominations. However, science still hasn't revealed everything to us about how the world functions. To better understand our minds, for instance, we need to meld ancient Buddhist sources with contemporary scientific findings. Science can even give religious thinking greater credibility, even among skeptics, though most people tend to dismiss the Dalai Lama's Buddhist methods as just religion. These methods have been scientifically proven to be effective in a number of contexts. For instance, Thupten Jinpa, the Dalai Lama's interpreter, developed Compassion Cultivation Training, or CCT, a variation of classical Tibetan methods suitable for anyone. An evaluation of CCT by researchers at the Center for Compassion and Altruism Research and Education at Stanford University found that it lessened people's anxiety and increased happiness even in those suffering from acute social phobia. In patients suffering from chronic pain, the sensitivity to pain decreased after 9 weeks. This is just one example of how religion and science can come together to complement each other's strengths and support each other's weaknesses. But science and religion are not the only facets of contemporary society that need a more compassionate and cooperative character. The economy needs them too, and urgently. Today, it is clear that capitalism is far from perfect. On the other hand, so is socialism. Is it even possible to create an economy that does not result in lasting social damage? The Dalai Lama believes so. First, it is important to recognize that most problems do not arise from the principles of an economic system. Rather, it is the lack of moral compassion on the part of the people that implement the system. Both capitalism and communism can be corrupted by selfishness and exploitation. Our current capitalist predicament has led to a rapidly growing divide between the rich and the poor. The book Capital analyzes data trends over centuries to reveal how those with money to invest will always earn more than those who labor for their wages. An ever-increasing disparity and inequality between the rich and the poor seems inherent to a free market economy. The Dalai Lama consequently positions himself as a Marxist in this respect, as Marxism at least features a moral dimension that takes people's well-being into account. Of course, many attempts at socialist economies have proven disastrous. So what is the Dalai Lama's solution? He envisions a compassionate economy where entrepreneurial spirit is accompanied by a sound social support system and taxes on wealth. In other words, we need for-profit companies with the hearts of nonprofits. Such companies actually exist already. One is Prosperity Candle, which provides Iraqi or Thai-Burmese refugees, Haiti earthquake victims, and about 600 underprivileged women with the opportunity to make a living by making candles. In a similar vein, Muhammad Yunus's Grameen Bank in Bangladesh pioneered microloans for people living in poverty. These loans help them start their own businesses, allowing them to become self-sufficient and eventually pay the money back, which can then be lent to others. Companies like this reshape capitalism into something more meaningful, not just profitable. This emerging movement may prove to be very successful at turning business into a force for good. As humans, we all share the same potential. Unfortunately, we often do not share the same opportunities. Even so, both advantaged and disadvantaged groups in society are responsible for working together toward change. Rather than looking down on marginalized groups in society, the privileged should do their part by learning about what resources would benefit the less fortunate, be it education, job training, or community support. Wealthier sectors of society can make a huge difference in the lives of the poor simply by donating a little of their time and energy. And what about those who are in need? Although they face considerable challenges, they too have a responsibility to help themselves, even if it seems useless. Many Tibetans have learned to approach their experience of poverty and oppression with this attitude. In the past, Chinese communist officials spread propaganda about the inferiority of the Tibetan brain, lies which some Tibetans even began to believe themselves. But when given the same opportunities in education and the workforce, Tibetans naturally performed just as well as the Chinese. Realizing that they were perfectly capable of helping themselves, Tibetans freed themselves from this racial stereotype and started working harder at school, resulting in greater success and a brighter future. Humans' ability to improve their own lives is quite incredible, and psychologists have described this phenomenon in many different terms. Carol Dweck, a Stanford psychologist, refers to it as mindset, the belief that you can succeed. By maintaining such a mindset, you are more likely to keep trying. The more you try, the more likely you are to succeed. Another psychologist, Angela Duckworth of the University of Pennsylvania, calls it grit. Persevering toward long-term goals despite setbacks and obstacles. Finally, Gandhi uses the Hindi term swarja, meaning self-mastery or self-rule. No matter what you call it, one thing is certain. Circumstances only change for the better as a result of this powerful attitude. Would you burn your furniture to stay warm during the winter? Of course not. Likewise, the Dalai Lama thinks we should not be laying waste to our planet, as it is our only home. Unfortunately, our home has been placed at incredible risk over the last 60 years. But why? An obsession with profit and money has seen humans' impact on the planet become increasingly damaging. Growing numbers of cars on the road, wasteful use of water, paper and other resources, and the irresponsible use of chemical fertilizers are just a few of the human activities that are wreaking havoc on our environment. There is no way we can continue pretending to be ignorant of the destructive impact of human activities. We all know full well the damage we cause. So, why do we continue to exploit our planet? Because our desire for money outweighs our fear of future risks. Though the Chinese central government has tried to restrict logging practices that have repeatedly caused major floods in northern India, Bangladesh, and China, some people, in the interests of continued profits, have found ways to continue cutting trees that protect river systems from silt and flooding. Cognitive scientist Elk Weber explains that our apparently shameless exploitation of the planet comes from our ability to block out the guilt we feel about our negative environmental footprint. As individuals, it is our responsibility to stop ourselves from tuning out. One simple way to do this is by using a handprint as a way of tracking your personal impacts and the sum total of your better ecological practices. A person's handprint is a measure of positive ecological practices, like turning off light switches or biking instead of driving. Each action can enlarge the handprint, motivating us to stay aware of human impacts on the planet and act accordingly. Even the Dalai Lama concedes that humans will always create conflict. Clashes of ideas are only natural. In order to cope with such clashes, good communication and mutual understanding are vital. In fact, it is easier to create a healthy dialogue than you may think. There are a handful of basic moves that you can turn to during a confrontation with another. The first is as simple as saying something positive about the other person and something positive about yourself. That is exactly what philosopher A.J. Ayer did in 1987 at a high society party in New York. Notified that somebody was being assaulted, Ayer rushed to the scene to find Mike Tyson forcing himself on then-unknown Naomi Campbell. Ayer insisted that Tyson stop, to which Tyson asked him, "Don't you know who the bleep I am? I'm Mike Tyson, heavyweight champion of the world." Ayer replied, "And I am the former Wykeham professor of logic. We are both preeminent men in our field. I suggest we talk about this like rational men." While they talked, Campbell slipped safely out of the room. In this situation, Ayer demonstrated commendable emotional intelligence by saying something positive about Tyson and about himself. He established the foundation for an open dialogue on a level playing field. But what if you are facing a conflict that's been around for months, years, or even centuries? The solution is simple: friendship between individuals. To prove that this approach really works, social psychologist Thomas Pettigrew tracked down more than 500 studies from more than 38 countries with responses from a quarter of a million people. He found that time and time again, an emotional involvement with someone from the opposing group, be it a friendship or a romance, was enough to overcome that prejudice. What parent doesn't want their kid to get good grades? Although it seems healthy to encourage children to pursue academic success, it can lead to immense pressure and emotional damage. In a world where academic achievement is everything, the Dalai Lama believes that modern schooling needs a reform that prioritizes the heart. One way to educate the heart is through mind training. Mind training is not the same as learning facts, figures, and historical dates. Rather, training the mind centers on improving a student's ability to concentrate, regulate, and reflect on their thoughts. Simran Dole, an 11th grader, sat with her eyes fixed on a dot in front of her while wearing a helmet that measured her concentration levels. Her concentration soon began to waver, so the Dalai Lama reminded Simran that when training our mind, it is useful to make a distinction between the mental and sensory levels of thought. As Simran observed the dot, her mind was focused on it on the sensory level, but this focus was hindered by other sounds and sensations. In order to sharpen her focus, Simran began to concentrate on the dot within the mental plane as well. This meant holding the image in her mind's eye. her concentration made a striking improvement, demonstrating the power of a rather simple but very useful technique. Just think of all the times when you know you could have made a better choice if you had just been more concentrated on the task at hand. Today's children are tomorrow's leaders, so we should equip them with what they really need: powerful, reliable ethics, and the capacity for living by compassionate values. Using mind-training exercises like the one performed by Simran, the Dalai Lama's proposed education of the heart covers the basics of how the mind works, the dynamics of our emotions, skills for healthy regulation of emotional impulse, the cultivation of attention, empathy, and caring, learning to handle conflicts non-violently, and above all else, a sense of openness with humanity. Though the current global situation can often seem quite dire, we've got a lot to be thankful for. It's all a matter of perspective. Think about it. In the past, when nations declared war, citizens would proudly join in the violence. These days, people are fed up with the glorification of war, and strong movements for peace have shaken the political foundations of countries all around the world. Looking at things in the long term can help us stay optimistic, even when the present seems overwhelmingly grim. The late Carl Friedrich von Weizsäcker, a German philosopher and the Dalai Lama's tutor in quantum physics, recalls how the German and French were once bitter enemies. Yet, within von Weizsäcker's lifetime, Charles de Gaulle, who had led the Free French Army against the Nazis, became close friends with the German Chancellor Konrad Adenauer. The two leaders joined forces to support the formation of the European Union. Today, peaceful relations between certain countries at war seems equally unimaginable, especially when we watch the news. Of course, the function of mass media is to inform us about current problems and threats. This can give us the impression that compassion among humans has long since disappeared, and that the cruelty will only escalate as each new day brings another round of frightening headlines. But we must remember that on any given day, the amount of kindness in the world vastly exceeds the incidence of cruelty. We just rarely hear about the positive side of things. What if more positive news was spread? Perhaps then we would see that kindness, not cruelty, is at the heart of human interaction and would act accordingly. Being able to maintain a positive attitude is vital, as is the ability to act on it and persist. Rather than simply talking about creating change, we've got to just do it. The Reverend Bill Cruz runs a range of humanitarian projects in Sydney, Australia, from soup kitchens to homeless shelters and free health clinics, or even providing reading tutors for underprivileged schoolchildren. When visiting, even the Dalai Lama put on an apron over his monk's robes and joined Bill Cruz while serving food. And that's what each and every one of us needs to do. Get involved. It doesn't matter who you are, where you are, or what means you have. We all have the potential to take action and help. The Dalai Lama firmly believes that the power to create change lies far more in the hands of individuals than in the hands of organizations, governments, or dictators. No matter how comprehensive a set of top-down changes may be, you simply cannot force people to be compassionate. So don't wait for society to change. Change yourself and provide as an example for others. So, how can you start? It depends on you. As the Dalai Lama says, everyone can find a context where they make a difference. The human community is nothing but individuals combined. Final summary. In a world of rampant cruelty and suffering, it is time to make a change, and it all starts with you. The power for change lies with individuals and their ability to shift away from self-interest and negativity and toward compassion and positive action. This concludes A Force for Good by Daniel Goleman. Get Some Headspace by Andy Pettycomb. Get Some Headspace paves an easy path to understanding meditation and the ways it can benefit us. Drawing on his own experience as a Buddhist monk, Pettycomb offers a strong case that even the busiest of people can take 10 minutes a day to get some much-needed headspace and live better because of it. Do you find your mind wandering, restless, stressed, and even chaotic? You are not alone. The tempo of modern life can make you feel overwhelmed with things to do, places to see, and life-affirming moments to be had. So, how do you squeeze in some peace of mind? Maybe it is not about doing more, but instead about finding an opportunity to tune out the buzz and appreciate what you are experiencing. Meditation is about being aware and mindful of what you are already doing. It is about creating headspace in everything you do, instead of cramming in 1 hour of meditation when you think you'll have the time for it. In this book, you will not only discover how meditation will help you, but also how to combine it with your current life. It can be easier than you think. Imagine a life in which you can relish the moment and are free of extraneous thoughts, worries, and distractions. This clear-headed state can be referred to as headspace. Sounds blissful, right? But how do you get there? As you may have guessed, through meditation. By practicing regular meditation, you can teach your mind to relax back into its natural, chaos-free state. So, what exactly is meditation? It is a gentle unwinding of the mind in order to cultivate a more direct insight into the moment. It is being conscious of how and why we feel the way we do. Engaging in meditation offers a break from all the pressures and distractions of the modern world that make a perfect breeding ground for anxiety and in turn affect our happiness and our relationships. Furthermore, meditation is the skill of knowing how to step back and not let yourself get caught up in the endless spirals of unproductive negative thoughts. A frantic, anxious mind is like a wild horse. To train it, you must be easy on it. Cut it some slack and give it the space it needs. Gentleness is the key. Great techniques to ease into meditation include simply sitting still and allowing your thoughts to drift by without becoming attached to them. You can elaborate on this exercise by focusing on a particular sense, such as sight or sound. And if you feel yourself getting hijacked by your thoughts, simply refocus your attention to that particular sense. If you are looking for moments of clarity, they will come from not doing and stepping back to allow the mind to wind down when and how it wants. Contrary to popular belief, there is no such thing as good or bad or right or wrong meditation. There is only a distracted or undistracted meditation or an aware or unaware person. Where do you go when you want to start to incorporate mindfulness into your life and get some headspace? Well, do not rush in and set lofty goals from the very first time you sit down. Set some expectations, which will get you into the right frame of mind. When you start to practice meditation, it is useful to realize that the more you try to hold on to pleasant feelings, the more scared you'll become of losing them. You need to learn to let go. Meditation provides happiness by dropping resistance and heightening awareness. With little resistance, we feel comfortable regardless of the emotion we are experiencing, whether it is positive or negative. You can experience a quieter, more relaxed mental state when you give up the desire to constantly experience pleasant things and stop struggling to always avoid unpleasant things. A stressed mind is often the result of repressed emotions or the inability to deal with challenging feelings in a situation, an event, or environment. That is why you should approach meditation with the intention to rest in the moment and not judge any emotions you feel. It is not about digging up old memories, thoughts, or emotions, nor is it about controlling the mind. It is actually about relinquishing control, focusing attention in a more passive way, and allowing the mind to unwind at its own pace in order to let go. Imagine you are at the side of a busy highway, and all your thoughts are represented by the passing cars. When meditating, it is not your job to jump onto the road and start directing traffic. Your job is to allow your thoughts to pass by. Want to dive straight into an hour-long meditation class complete with chanting, burning incense, and chiming bells? Perhaps not. But is there another way? Of course. The Take 10 meditation is a brief session that gently gets you into the right frame of mind. Here is how to do it. Take 5 to 10 minutes to begin to slow down. Then find a comfortable chair and set a timer for 10 more minutes. A relatively unobtrusive timer is preferable. Nobody wants to be startled back to reality with a rooster call ringtone. Next, it is check-in time. Begin by bringing your mind and body into alignment. As you let your eyes close, take 5 minutes to draw your awareness to your body. With your focus, scan your body from head to toe. Now, create an image of how your body feels and allow your thoughts to drift in and out. If you get distracted by a thought, no problem. Simply return to the part where you got distracted during your body scan. Now, it is time to begin focusing on breath. Take 30 seconds to fully observe everything about your breath as you breathe in and out. Silently, count the in-breath as 1 and the out-breath as 2, and continue breathing and counting until you reach 10. Repeat this exercise until the timer goes off. If you get distracted again, simply restart at 1. To round off your Take 10, continue to free up your mind. Try not to focus on anything in particular, and for 10 to 20 seconds, gently give your mind some space. Then, bring your focus back to the physical sensations of your body and your environment. Allow this awareness and newly created space to stay with you for the entire day. Sitting down to meditate now and then is great, but how can you integrate meditation more deeply into your life? You can start with walking. Walking does not need to be a passive autopilot activity that leaves the mind trailing off into unproductive thoughts. You can use this time for a walking meditation exercise. Begin by focusing on your body and observing the sensations you feel when walking. Take 30 seconds to take in your environment visually. Then turn your focus to sounds, and then to what you can smell. Finally, bring your attention to physical sensations such as the warmth of the sun or the cool breeze. After a moment or two, notice your body's movement and your feet as they hit the ground, just as you focus on your breath during the sitting meditation. Walking is only one way that you can incorporate meditation into other parts of your life. You can also use meditative techniques with running and exercise. The running meditation, for example, brings a balance of focus and relaxation to your exercise routines and helps you do them with far less effort. Before you start exercising, check in with yourself mentally and physically to get a sense of how you are feeling. Focus and ground yourself by taking some deep breaths. As you begin running, bring your awareness to your body, your breathing, and the ways your mind is reacting to the initial sensations. As you settle into your run, observe your rhythm and whether your body feels tense or comfortable. The aim is not to try to change any of these sensations, but simply to be aware of them. If you feel discomfort, use it as an effective object of focus, just like the sensation of the foot striking the ground with the walking meditation. Observing these sensations can be central for helping you to be mindful and remain in the moment. You do not need to carve out more time to retrain your mind, because when you are able to quit desperately rummaging around in your head and trying to control every little thing, you'll realize you've already created all the time and space you need to be more at peace. Use this clarity and headspace to provide a foundation from which you can handle the next 24 hours. To retain your focus, view your day as a series of dots to connect. Move from one dot to the next instead of trying to run through the whole thing at once. This will make it easier to have purpose and awareness. As an added benefit, meditation and mindful living do not only affect your own life, but lead to increased compassion and understanding in your relationships. By concentrating less on your own worries and issues, and more on the potential happiness of others, you will also do yourself a favor and create more headspace. Being present and living in the moment improves your relationships as it helps you to listen to what someone else is actually saying, rather than just noting what you want to add to the conversation next. Your increased headspace enables you to become more patient with others too. Impatience feels like an inevitable part of modern society, but meditation shows us that when we are aware of our unwillingness to relax and be tolerant, impatience loses its power over us. Practicing meditation and applying mindfulness techniques to other routines in your life does not just calm you, it can also improve your quality of sleep and your eating habits too. To drift off faster and dodge insomnia, you can use the sleep meditation. Begin by checking in with yourself and observing how you feel. Then, hone in on your breathing for a couple of moments and walk yourself through your day from waking up to getting into bed. Then, spend some time attending to each part of your body with the intention of turning it off. This winding down meditation will help prepare you for a restful sleep. General meditation can aid your sleep too. One study at the University of Massachusetts Medical School found that 58% of insomniacs experienced significant improvements in their sleep and a massive 91% cut down on or stopped taking medications as a result of practicing meditation. there are more benefits to be had with eating, too. The eating meditation can foster a healthy relationship to food. It helps reduce the impulses and thoughts that dictate our choices and actions when it comes to what we put in our bodies. Begin the meditation with the Take 10 method by focusing on your breath, slowing your mind, and settling in. Acknowledge where the food on your plate came from. Recognize its value and the fact that it is available for you. Look at the food and notice its texture, color, smell, and how your mind reacts to these characteristics. Then start your meal, maintaining the focus of being in the moment as you eat. If your thoughts begin to trail off or you get impatient, softly coax yourself back to the food and your breath. Again, even practicing meditation in general can have remarkable effects on eating habits. After battling an eating disorder and obsessive-compulsive tendencies, Amy, a 24-year-old patient at the author's clinic, used meditation to return to a healthy lifestyle. With all the distractions and pressures of today, it is increasingly common to fall prey to stress and anxiety. Luckily, we know that living mindfully has been scientifically proven to be invaluable to our well-being. So, how can you achieve mindfulness and experience less stress? By adhering to your daily meditation. Research shows that meditation can lower blood pressure, heart rate, breathing rate, and oxygen consumption at the same time as boosting the immune system. A study from Oxford University found that stress can play a large role in the ability of women to conceive and suggests that techniques like meditation could be key to supporting fertility. Research from the University of Massachusetts Medical School even found that stress-related skin conditions cleared up 4 times more rapidly when a meditation routine was practiced. Studies have also shown that meditation can significantly ease symptoms of anxiety and depression. That is because it allows emotions to come and go without building up into a negative filter that distorts our perception of the world. A year of meditation enabled Pam, a 51-year-old patient at the author's clinic, to come off her antidepressants. Furthermore, neuroscientists at UCLA confirmed that those who engage in mindfulness techniques are able to identify their emotions, are more aware of them, and are therefore less affected by the negative ones. Similarly, after 8 weeks of meditation practice, 90% of participants in a University of Massachusetts Medical School study displayed a significant reduction in both anxiety and depression. Final summary. Meditation does not have to involve hour-long plus sessions in a room full of incense and chanting. The key is approaching it with a gentle curiosity. Meditating for just 10 minutes a day will help you to become present, to be aware of your emotions, and to lead a calmer, more mindful life. This concludes Get Some Headspace by Andy Pettycomb. The 7 Spiritual Laws of Success by Deepak Chopra. The 7 Spiritual Laws of Success is about the forces in the universe that can lead you toward the perfect job, increased wealth and well-being, strong relationships, and most importantly, the ability to enjoy what you have this moment. Discover the 7 Universal Laws of Success and tap into the endless energy and abundance of the universe. Success. We all want it, even though definitions of success may differ from one person to another. Regardless of what kind of success you believe in, you want to achieve it. However, there are certain things you should focus on. We are not talking about getting perfect grades or nailing every job interview or making so much money. Success depends on factors that are much deeper and more spiritual than that, and they can all be summed up in seven spiritual laws. These seven laws have to do with how you connect with your true self and how you interact with others. They are about the flow of energy in the world, about being in the here and now without struggling against change. So, let us take a journey and explore how the seven spiritual laws of success will help you reach your goals and live a fantastic life. Have you ever been alone in nature and experienced a moment of profound silence? If so, you may have felt a sense of peacefulness and connectedness with the universe. It is in these peaceful moments that you can find your true self and unlock the potential to fulfill your life's desires. When you feel connected to your environment and the people within it, you realize that you are not a separate entity that is cut off from the rest of the world. You can sense that the world is a connected field of energy that unites everyone and everything on the planet. But it is not just the planet. Indeed, this field of energy is a boundless source of power for the whole universe.